Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, March 23rd, 2019. This is episode 1576. Enjoy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet. What else? Smartphones, smartwatches. You know, there's always something, isn't there? Artificial reality, augmented reality, mixed reality, the HoloLens. You familiar with Microsoft's HoloLens? Talk about that too. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you can still reach me. All you have to do is call via Skype or something like that. It's a toll free number. Shouldn't cost you anything. 8888 Ask Leo. What happened in the world of tech this week? Let's see. Wasn't a huge week. We did have an interesting announcement from Google that on the surface looked really cool. Like, wow, this is exciting. Google calls it Stadia, and it is a streaming gaming service that will allow you to play high-end, fancy games on the simplest of devices, including, frankly, even just a Chromecast Ultra on your TV. Wouldn't that be cool? Except that after the event... And this happens always with these keynotes. You know, you get all excited. They're showing cool stuff. This is going to be great. And then at the end, the event ends, and they never mentioned a couple of things. How much? And when it's going to be available. All they said was sometime this year. Well, that could be 9 months from now. That could be a long time. So, Stadia, which is an interesting idea, is just that, an idea. And Microsoft and Sony and the other game companies are certainly going to respond. Microsoft's already working on something like it. The idea of these things is there's a whole group of people who would like to play games but don't want to buy an Xbox or a PlayStation 4 or a fancy computer just to play games. Maybe they're on a Chromebook or a laptop that doesn't have a lot of horsepower, or certainly there are more people on phones and anything else. Or maybe they're just sitting in their living room thinking, golly, if I only had a controller and a game, I could put it on my TV and play, you know, my big screen, high dynamic range TV, and could play. And so that's what this is all about, is that they'll do the work in the Google Cloud. They'll do all, that'll be an Xbox in the cloud for you. Actually, it's, as they described it, faster, a lot faster than an Xbox or a PlayStation 4 Pro, like a super GPU custom designed for them from AMD, and, you know, a lot of horsepower and even the ability to apply multiple computers to a single game. Oh, man, that sounds great. And I could just get one of those $75 Chromecast Ultras, plug it into my beautiful HD TV, and get one of them controllers. They said we're going to make our own controllers, but you can use regular controllers, but I think we want to get those special googly controllers, and we play the game, and man, that'd be awesome, wouldn't it? But they didn't say, well, how much is that going to cost? $1,000 a month, $1 a month? What's that going to cost, and how much is a controller going to cost, and when are we going to be able to do all this? And what they also neglected to mention, which is actually kind of a big deal, is they could do all this up in the cloud, but then they got to get it to my house. And I think we all know that a lot of us in the United States have terrible internet. Not only unreliable and slow, but with bandwidth caps. And we don't even know how much data this is going to take. So this is going to make a few people happy and make a lot of people very unhappy, because if your internet isn't fast enough, or more importantly, if there's something called latency, which is lag between you and the server, and a lot of people who think they have good internet have a lot of lag, You know it when you're on Skype or something like that, and there's a delay between when you talk and the other person talks, and you interrupt each other and all that. That's latency. That's bad, and it's really bad in a game. You're trying to play a game, you know, you're somebody, a bad guy's around the corner, and you know that, you know, he's going to come out and you can shoot at him. And the problem is, if you don't see him until 3 seconds after he appears, that game over, man, game over. So, you know, I always have to temper my excitement when I watch these big companies make major announcements, because they're always going to change the world, you know. This is the best, slimmest, fastest thing ever. Then you get it at home and you go, this is terrible. This is no good, terrible, no fun. Scary study just out. Scary for television networks. That 30% of all mobile internet traffic, more than a third of all the internet traffic on your smartphone or your tablet, 37% is YouTube. What are you people doing? Y'all watching YouTube? Yeah, it's the young people, isn't it? Y'all watching YouTube out there? That's all you watch, isn't it? The thing is, I'm not talking at home. I'm talking about mobile. You're walking around. No wonder people are walking into traffic. They're watching YouTube. They're watching PewDiePie. 37%. Holy cow. Facebook, less than 10%. Well, that's good news. Snapchat, also less than 10%. So, you know, you might think the kids today, they're all Snapchatting. No, they're watching YouTube videos. Oh, here's a nice one about Facebook. We need a little, Big P, we got to make a little sounder for this, a little music. The Facebook gaffe of the week. Another mess up. Facebook stored hundreds of millions of user passwords in plain text for years. Now, you may not know this, but when you give your password to a company or a site, what they're supposed to do is scramble it, is encrypt it, so that no one can see it, right? That's just the right thing to do. And if they do that and a bad guy gets into the database, well, it's okay. In fact, there's even better ways to scramble it than just plain encrypting it. They want to hash it with salt, which sounds delicious, but in fact is secure. Facebook didn't do that. They didn't do any of that. Facebook says an ongoing investigation has so far found no indication that employees have abused this data. But employees, and again, this is important to make a distinction. This wasn't out in the public. It wasn't sitting on a website somewhere. But anybody who worked at Facebook had access to this. So that means Facebook, and this should bother you a little bit, that some random Facebook employee could log into your account because your password is just sitting there. The investigation, according to an inside source, Brian Krebs talking about this in his great security blog, the Facebook source said the investigation so far indicates between 200 million and 600 million, well, that's a big difference, 200 million and 600 million Facebook users may have had their account passwords stored in plain text and searchable by more than 20,000 Facebook employees. Woohoo! So far, said Facebook, we have no indication that anybody took advantage of that. Oh, Facebook did, well, the insider did say that 2,000 engineers and developers did make 9 million internal queries for data elements that contained plain text user passwords. So that's 9 million requests for those passwords. Seems like somebody might have looked for something. Facebook will notify you, hundreds of millions of Facebook Lite users, tens of millions of other Facebook users, and tens of thousands of Instagram users, that your password might have been sitting there publicly, just waiting for somebody to come along. The Facebook gaffe of the week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Kim Schaffer is in her perch, ready to answer your calls and get you on the air. Give me a ring. It is Kim Schaffer taking your calls at 8888 Ask Leo. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning.
Do you like your new theme?
I love it.
All right.
I especially love the end that's going to throw people off, and they're going to be calling saying, what did they say?
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. We can't get in trouble for that. That's her name, Kimmy Schmidt.
Schmidt.
So you, I can't believe it. You've been here all morning keeping the phones alive, answering the calls.
Hours and hours
of fun.
Yep.
Who should I begin this program with?
Oh, I can't even see the name. Too much writing. Laura in Beaumont, Texas just updated her Google Chrome browser, and now her screen reader doesn't seem
I don't know if I can help her. I'll try.
Roll it back to the older version.
Yeah, I'll do what I can here. Thank you, Kim. Hi, Laura.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. So, you're supposed to be able to update your browsers regularly because there's always flaws and stuff. And but what screen reader do you use?
I'm using Zoom Text.
That's the built-in screen.
It's actually made by Freedom Scientific.
Oh, okay.
But the thing is I was looking at the release notes, and Google did something very, very crazy when I went from 68 to 72. In 71, they did something very crazy. It says, where is it? Specify, require user activation before using the speech synthesis API.
Is Zoom Text just a magnifier, or does it also read text?
It reads. It reads, too. And then down further, it says, removed speech synthesis dot speak, open parentheses, close parentheses, without user activation.
Nice. So
thinking that
they broke it.
They broke it, exactly. And I looked online, and Google doesn't offer like legacy versions of Chrome. And I use this at both home and at work.
So,
my IT team at work is going crazy.
Bonkers. Yeah.
Yeah.
So according to Google, there is an extension, the Zoom Chrome extension, that you need to now install. So this sometimes will happen, that for security reasons, they want to make sure that people are intentionally enabling this. So
okay.
So I'm just looking at this. I'm trying to find the Zoom Text extension. They say get the Zoom Text extension, but I don't see it off the top of my head. Have you talked to the Zoom Text people?
The Zoom Text people told me to install to upgrade to Zoom Text 2019, which we did at work, and it still isn't working.
Well, that's no good. So from time to time this happens, and everybody who uses a browser has experienced something like this. This is a little bit more critical, but sometimes extensions or programs stop working with the browser because the browser changes how plugins work, and that sounds like what's gone on here.
What we're thinking, but
yeah.
And what I really, really, really am frustrated about, though, is you can't get to anybody at Google to actually have a conversation.
No, of course not. Google, there's no one there. It's all robots all the way down.
Exactly.
Yeah. Google's famous for that. We often say that the Google tech support is a script. It's a Python script that runs. And I think in most cases it is. So I am I'm at the ZoomText.com website. That's the company, right? ZoomText.com.
No, that's the old AI Squared website. You have to go to Freedom Scientific's website.
Oh, boy. This is the other problem, which I really... Unfortunately, a lot of accessibility programs are created by companies that don't invest the money. I'm sure that Freedom Scientific knew this was coming. Google is pretty clear about upcoming changes, but maybe didn't act quickly enough. And you pay a lot, I bet you, for this program.
Yes.
So there's, they really ought to. I'm looking at their site. So they said, Freedom Scientific said update to Zoom Text 2019.
Yes.
But that didn't fix it.
No. I'm actually the only fix we've come up with for it is Microsoft Edge.
Yeah, just use a different browser.
Out of four browsers, I've got one that works at work right now. Out of Chrome, Firefox.
Firefox doesn't work either.
with the one program, the one actual program we use at work, yeah, Firefox isn't working either at the moment.
That is interesting. So that does tell me, by the way, that is a change to the plugin architecture, because Firefox recently took out a number of extensions called NPAPI extensions. They broke those because they didn't feel they were secure. And I'm wondering if that's how ZoomText worked. So I'm looking on, you know, the only thing I see about this is download the ZoomText Chrome extension, but I don't know if there is one or if that'll help. Did they say anything at Freedom Scientific about that?
No, they didn't. I'm looking here. Somebody put a log in the chat, a thing in the chat room, which I'm going to see what I can find out about it right now.
Yeah.
ZoomText only, add to Chrome, see what that
does. Add to Chrome would be the extension.
Yeah, let me see what that is.
Yeah, I would try that. That's what is being cited as the thing to do. And that would make sense because what probably has happened, and it's for security reasons, is this automatic launching of an extension by the browser is dangerous. People can use that to compromise your machine because they get something to launch automatically. That's always dangerous. So they want the user to explicitly install this extension. And frankly, the ZoomText installer should probably do that. Edge isn't so bad, although I have to warn you, they're going to modify Edge soon. Microsoft is.
Yeah.
We're going to call it Credge.
I know that. Yeah,
it's going to have the Chromium engine in it. But that may not have the same impact, because just because you have the engine doesn't mean you have all the limitations. So, I don't know anything about it. But if you can, if there is a install ZoomText in Chrome link, that's what I would do. That means it's an extension, and that's what you want to do.
Yeah. Well, that looks
see like if it works. Yeah. Boy, I'm sorry, Laura. That's frustrating. And you know, it's doubly frustrating for people who have low vision or no vision, because they don't have the same ability to figure out, well, you know, what's going on. And frankly, I think the burden is on Freedom Scientific to make sure that you get an update that works, because Chrome has to update. That's important for all of us to keep it secure. So it's important not to use older versions of browsers. So if they have an extension, try that. And I thank you for the call, Laura. Coming up in just a bit, Scott Wilkinson, is he here this week? Home theater guru. No, he's not. Well, more calls then. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo, are you a Comcast subscriber? Then I know you want to send Comcast more of your money. Why wouldn't you? Comcast has announced something called the Xfinity Flex. It's a $5 a month service. It lets you stream 4K high dynamic range content through a selection of apps. You can use game control, voice controls. You know, it sounds a lot like a Roku, doesn't it? Well, not only do you have to pay $5 a month to rent the fake Roku, you'll also need to use an Xfinity XFi gateway. The modem Comcast rents you for a monthly fee. That's about $10 a month. And the voice remote does come with the Xfinity Flex, and it'll let you control other connected devices in your home, as long as you bought them or rented them from Comcast. So this is what this is what we're going to start seeing, which is less good versions of things like the Roku and the Amazon Echo tied to big companies, hoping that you don't know any better. It'll be interesting to see how many people buy this. I recently got rid of my rented Comcast modem. What a ripoff that is. Bought my own modem, and they punish you. They find ways to punish you for doing that, but I did it anyway. And everybody should probably look at that, because a cable modem costs about $100, which means you pay for it in less than a year, and then you never have to pay that rental fee again. Plus, you're probably getting something a lot more modern and more reliable. But I think this is kind of normal, which is, these big companies, they think that you're kind of a captive consumer. And in most cases, you are. In fact, it's the reason I started the show many moons ago, like 27 years ago, was I really thought that this was coming, that this time was coming where, you know, when I first started doing this in the early 90s, it was still kind of a hobbyist thing. I mean, sure, there were, you know, business computers and all of that, but it was still kind of a hobbyist thing. The big companies hadn't moved in yet. But I sensed it coming, and I knew that it was important that we all know a little bit more about technology so we could defend ourselves, so that we'd have the knowledge to say to Comcast, well, that's nice, but an infinite $15 a month to use this thing doesn't make a lot of sense when I could buy a Roku for $60 and we're at an Amazon Echo for $30. So just a word of warning. That's all. You know, a lot of people, oh, it's worth it. It's convenient. I rent it from that nice Comcast lady. No big deal. Ron in New Jersey, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Ron.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you. I use Hangouts on my laptop and desktop to send and receive emails and answer and make phone calls.
As do I.
And it mirrors my phone very well. But now that Google Hangouts is going away at the end of the summer or sometime, something called Chat and Meet, and I have no idea what that is. If it does the same thing.
It does not. And Google's messaging strategy is incredibly complex and dumb. However, I wouldn't give up yet. The Chat and Meet, I believe, is intended for business users. And
okay.
I'm hoping that Google will keep Hangouts around. They kind of have to because Google Fi users can continue to use Hangouts. So I have a feeling that that really is an end of life for business users only. They want business users.
Oh, I'm a Google Fi user, so it will keep on working for me?
Yes.
Oh, great. Great.
Yeah, as am I. As far as I know, but, you know, there's no promises. Google just killed is about to kill. I think it's April 2nd. Will kill Allo, their assistant-based messenger. No reason. Just, yeah, we don't. Yeah, we're going to kill it. Google Inbox, which I know a lot of people use. Well, you know. And Google Plus, which was the number one initiative for the company just a few years ago. All three of those go away April 2nd. So Google is in this get-rid-of mode. They're doing a Marie Kondo thing, right? They're just saying, if it doesn't spark joy, just throw it out.
Yeah.
It's Marie Kondo time at the Goog. But, yeah, I think I'm praying. I agree with you. Hangouts is a great solution because I can use the desktop and my phone and have unified messaging. Google keeps saying, oh, no, Android Messages is going to, you know, it can do all of that. But it can't. I think they ultimately want to move you to Messages because there's a new technology they want everybody to use called RCS, Rich Communications Services. They want to replace SMS, but they have to get all the carriers to sign off, and many of them have not. It will have all the features of Apple's Messages. That's the real reason for this, is to compete with Apple's Messages. And it will be cross-platform and you know, not owned by any one company. So Google's really pushing RCS, and I think that's why they want to phase out Hangouts in favor of Android Messages. But until Android Messages does all those things you just talked about.
Yeah. Is that Messages on the web? Because I found that, and
it
works for messages, but for phone calls, it doesn't
right.
do anything.
So, yeah, their idea is you have messages on your phone. That's on your Android phone, including your Fi phone. That's your message application, your SMS application. It supports Rich Communication Services. And then,
it does.
Yeah, and then you install it on your in your browser as an extension, and then you'll have to use a QR code to match it to the phone. A couple of problems, unlike Hangouts, which I could put on my iPhone. There's no iPhone version of this. It's limited to, I don't know, I think you can't put it on more than one desktop either. It's fairly limited, and it doesn't do the phone calling or any of the other features. So Hangouts is still the best solution as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I have it on my laptop, my desktop, and I think it's even on my tablet. So.
Yeah, I have it everywhere, including all my iOS devices because there's a Hangouts app. So when somebody says, and I use my Fi number as my main number, it was my Google Voice number. It's my main number, which I give out. It's on my business card. It's in my emails. And that way I know that anybody sends me a text message, it'll go to all my devices or calls my Fi phone, all my other phones will ring. That's a very handy feature, which means I'm sure Google will kill it any minute now. And by the way, it's really frustrating because when you sign up for Fi, you have to take either you're going to lose your Google Voice number or you have to transfer it to Fi and lose a lot of features. And that was a Sophie's choice. I didn't really enjoy.
Yeah.
So one of my children had to go. I kept my Google Voice number as a Fi number and just hope that they don't destroy it completely, which, you know, that's life. In fact, try to go, if once you're a Fi member, you try to go to Google Voice, you get rerouted to Fi. There's a little hidden link at the bottom of the page. You go to Voice, and then it says, wouldn't you like to try the new Voice? And you say, yeah, and then it gets you back to Fi. So, Google, you'd think for like one of this giant company that has all these programmers, they have more PhDs than Harvard, you'd think they could figure this out, but no. Anyway, still, I would say keep you, especially if you're on Fi, keep using Hangouts. And you and I.
Keep our fingers crossed.
We'll keep our fingers crossed. I think there are a lot of Fi users who will be very upset if Google doesn't come up with a comparable alternative before they kill it.
Yeah. Great.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Thanks for giving me a chance once more to rant against Google's crazy messaging platform. I don't, you know, they got thousands of programmers. Part of the problem with Google is nobody wants to work on legacy things. Everyone wants to work on the new shiny thing. So they can never get any of their good programmers working on their old stuff. Really, Google? Really? You make billions of dollars a month and you can't find somebody to do that? Really? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number, website. If you hear stuff on the show and you want to know more or you want to yell at me, go to techguylabs.com. There's no sign up. It's free. You can see every show going way back to episode 1. We're now at episode 1,576. You can listen and see most of those episodes, audio and videos up there after the fact. You can see and hear and read every question and answer. And then you can also comment on those if you have an opinion. And we actually welcome that. I'd like to hear additions, dissensions, anything you want to add. 8880, except ads. No spam allowed. 8888 Ask Leo. David's on the line from L.A. Hello, David. Sorry, John is on the line. My board is screwed up here. Sorry about that. John from Redondo Beach. And then I'll get to you, David. Hi, John.
Hi, can you hear me all right?
I hear you great. Thanks for calling.
I appreciate what you do. I try to catch you every weekend.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
About 6 weeks ago, I got a pair of hearing aids.
Nice. I bet your wife's happy.
Pardon?
I bet your wife is happy.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just teasing you. I wear them, too. No shame in that. In fact, you should be proud. A lot of us guys are too vain to get them, but it really does make a difference, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. I'm pretty well pleased with them.
Good.
I'm glad to hear you have the experience now to help me out.
Well, I have a little experience. I wore the Starkey Halos for a long time, and I just recently upgraded to Resounds. I can tell you a lot about my experience. What's going on?
Well, when I got them, I had a Galaxy S5, and they have a little app that lets you adjust the hearing aids from the Galaxy,
right.
And they also have the ability to connect Bluetooth to one of the hearing aids.
That's a nice feature. I do that with mine so I can take phone calls or secretly listen to the ball game when I'm pretending to listen to my wife.
Yeah, I loved it. I was a little disappointed that mine doesn't connect for media, but at least it connects for phone audio.
Oh, that's too bad. Yeah. And that, who makes your hearing aids?
Unitron.
Okay. That may be a limitation of the hearing aids themselves because in order to, there's, in Bluetooth, you have what's called profiles. And there's one profile for phone calls. That's the headset profile. And there's another profile for listening to media, usually A2DP or aptX. If the Unitrons don't support that second profile, and they may not, then you'll only be able to do phone calls. You'd think it'd do both. It's just a limitation of the hearing aids themselves.
Yeah, got it. I think I understood that sort of. But now here's the issue. A week ago, I traded in my phone for a Galaxy 10e.
Ooh, nice upgrade. Do you like it?
In lots of ways. Of course, it's like getting a new computer.
Yeah.
It takes a while to learn how to use.
A while. You will be customizing this phone for years to come. I find I've had my 10E for a 10A Plus for a couple of weeks, and I find new settings almost every day. Like, oh, yeah. I didn't know. Oh, ooh, look. Oh, wow. Ooh.
Yeah.
If you come from an iPhone, it's like iPhone users go, what's going on here? There's too much customization. I don't want all that. Just tell me what to do, please. So they have an easy mode for you iPhone users. You can use that. So what are you trying to figure out here with this S10e?
Well, with the new phone, the earphone Bluetooth audio microphone mutes intermittently.
Oh.
Sometimes I initiate a call and the person on the other end is yelling at me and then hanging up.
Oh, I hate it when that happens.
Yeah.
And you're not putting the phone to your ear, right? You're just looking at it because you don't need to put it to your ear.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Sometimes I've had that happen with phones where you put it to your ear and it's supposed to. The phone is supposed to turn off the screen when you do that. But if it doesn't, your cheekbone sometimes will mute it and stuff like that. I've had that happen all the time. But you're not doing that because you're using hearing aids. So all you have to do is put the phone in front of your face like one of those Kardashian girls and talk into it. And so you're not accidentally hitting a mute button. I'm not sure why that's happening. One thing you might try is just unpair and repair. You know, just some.
Well, I've been through all that. I've been troubleshooting for a week and unpaired and repaired. They've kind of reset the whole Bluetooth and started me over.
And it still didn't, fix it.
I paired it with the opposite here. Hearing aid, you know, it was on the right side, put it on the left side. Yeah, nothing helps, so I'm trying to figure out, I guess one thing I'd like to know is how can I get high enough up to get somebody to tell me it's just not going to work, or they're going to fix it next week, or is it the phone? Or
Good luck. That's, you know, we're just going to have to...
Back off to an S9 if I knew that it fixed this problem. Well, I could still.
Well, I've seen this problem with the older Samsungs as well. In fact, I'm seeing right now. I'm looking right now in the Samsung community forums. Somebody having this exact problem with an S8. In fact, many people. So let me see if I can. If anybody found a solution. This is a very long thread. I'll put a link in the show notes to itself. I'm just looking. I'm scanning through the five pages. Did this work for a few days? Problem returned. Copy the solution. Worked for me. So it doesn't look like there's a perfect solution for this because everybody's complaining. No, it fixed it for a little bit. But let me see if I can. I'll put this in the show notes. I'll put a link in the show notes so you can run through it and see. Okay. I'm trying to find. Go to Settings, Advanced, and then uncheck Easy Mute. See, this is a perfect example of how crazy the Samsung phones are. You know what I do is I go to Settings. I would go to Settings and search for Mute. And then uncheck if you can find a setting for Easy Mute. Let's not do it easy. Let's do it the hard way. So try the easy mute button. I never even heard of this. Unfortunately, This is the one day I thought, do I need to bring my Samsung phone in? No, so I don't have it in front of me. So I don't know if it's available on the S10, but the easy mute button, I didn't even know there was a setting for that. This is exactly both the curse and the blessing of Samsung phones. They have so many settings. And if you go into the settings menu, it's not clear where to go. Fortunately, they have, and I've started using this everywhere on iPhones too. All the settings apps now have search. So I will search for the term that I'm looking for. In this case, search for mute and see if you can find an easy mute setting. That's in the S8. I don't know if it's in the S9 or S10, but it was in the S8, which makes me think it's still in the, because Samsung, that's why they have so many settings. They never take any out. They only put more in. I'll paste the Samsung thread into the show notes, and people can put that up in our web page. That's what we do. And then one of the reasons the red page is valuable is because some of the things I'm not going to walk you through because they're so long, but we'll just put them up there, and you can at your leisure go to techguylabs.com and find it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll take more of your calls right after this. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We talk smartphones. We talk smart watches. We talk smart race cars. 888-ASK-LEO. That's my number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can also reach us toll free from anywhere in the world, but you'll have to use Skype out or something like that to call that toll free number if you're outside the U.S. and Canada. 888-ASK-LEO. The website. I put lots of stuff up there. James DeRuvo's writing it all down at techguylabs.com. And because that's the place I'll send you if, I want to put a link up or whatever. We don't charge. There's no sign up. You can just go there and get that information. That's a very useful tool for me. Also useful for me, our great chat room. And I don't give them enough credit because Team Tech Guy is in there working hard, trying to answer the questions before I do. Sometimes they get it right, sometimes they get it wrong, but it's always very helpful. And if I forget something, I just say, chat room, what's the name of that? And they like that. There's 500 people in there. Each of them has 1/500th of my brain. They all are in charge of different parts of my brain. And so I don't have to remember anything anymore. They remember it all. That's your job, irc.twit.tv, if you want to play along. I was just talking, one of our visitors is an evangelist for Amazon Web Services. Web, right?
Yeah.
AWS. It's a funny name because it isn't really web services at all. It's internet services. But Amazon, way back in December or November of last year, at a big conference, announced that they were going to ship a race car, a little model race car for developers. Yeah, for programmers. They call it Deep Racer. And it's a 1/18th scale race car. And the idea is it's autonomous. So you don't get to steer it with a remote control, like a remote control vehicle. You get to steer it with programming code, which means you have to write it all ahead of time. And you have to say, if there's an obstacle in front of you, turn left, turn right. In effect, you're learning how to create the code for autonomous self-driving cars. I thought, that sounds like fun. So I bought it. And it's starting to come out. It'll be, I'll get mine in a couple of weeks, April 15th, just in time for tax day. It should be really interesting. It's designed to test something called reinforcement learning. That's an artificial intelligence technique, really kind of important technique if you think about it, where a device has some code, but the code gets modified as it experiences real-world interactions. So you take it out in a physical track, give it your program. First, you probably want to test your program in a simulator on screen, and if the car doesn't crash immediately, then you might upload it to the car and let it try. And there's a league. They're going to have a racing league for prizes and glory. There's going to be the Amazon Web Services Deep Racer Grand Finale to win the coveted AWS Deep Racer Cup. Boy can dream, can he? So it sounds like fun, doesn't it? Now, it's a little pricey, unfortunately. It's $400, but it's a pretty cool device. And I think a lot of people who want to learn more about artificial intelligence and machine learning are really intrigued and excited to get this. I know I am. I can't wait. And, you know, mine will be the dumbest deep racer on the track. But this little car has an Intel Atom processor, 4 gigs of RAM, 32 gigs of storage, Wi-Fi, a camera. I mean, that's pretty cool. Now, it doesn't run Windows, though. No. No, you really probably wouldn't want a self-driving car to blue screen in the middle of the road. So it's running Linux, Ubuntu Linux. I think this will be a lot of fun. And I have to warn our staff not to step on the... If you see a little race car zooming around the studios, don't step on it. Should be fun. Somebody's talking about the one that they got at reInvent where they announced this last year. They said it's all-wheel drive and it can go about 15 miles an hour. Oh, that sounds like trouble. Sounds like trouble. I can't wait. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. Let's go to line 4. I think now it's David in Los Angeles. Hi, David.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
My
pleasure. Hey, you got some really cool bumper hold music. Is that Tower of Power on your hold music?
No, you know, it sounds like it, doesn't it? But it's specially licensed piece of music that we can play. And we actually don't play it for you on hold. You're hearing what's going on in the studio. We play it for all the radio stations, so the engineers know that we're in a break. So we've been playing the same song for 14 years, and I am so sick of it. I can't tell you. But anyway, it's not Tower of Power. Is there a name for that, Big Pee Wee? I mean, or is it just kind of, it's just random?
I know there's a company called Smart Sounds that does stuff like that.
Yeah, you should get to listen. You know, what radio stations for years did is they would just, you'd actually, in the old days, you get them on records. Now you obviously download them. It's they call it production music. It's licensable. You pay a fee, and then you can use it all you want. And, man, we got our money's worth. So what can I do for you? Yes.
I got two quick questions for you. I've got a smartphone now, and when I put in contact and other stuff, it says, do you want to back up to Verizon Cloud?
Oh, isn't that nice of those Verizon people? Isn't that sweet of them? No, don't. Just you're on an Android device. Back it up to the Google Cloud and be done with it. First of all, Verizon charges you.
Yeah.
It's not, I mean, they give you some small amount free, but they really want you to start using it up. Second of all, I wouldn't trust Verizon with anything.
Well, after stuff you're seeing about Google, I begin to wonder about that.
Well, yeah, I think if I had to choose between Verizon and Google, I'd choose Google. You know, I'm a Verizon customer too, and I do not back up to the Verizon Cloud. Honestly, it's a duplicate of what you already get from Google.
Okay. And then, I've been using, the Verizon Safe Wi-Fi for a VPN. Is that adequate or should I pop a nickel in?
Yeah. I mean, you pay for that too, don't you?
I think it's like $2.99 a month or $3.99 a month.
I should look more into that because I don't know what they're doing. There's two reasons you might use a virtual private network. One is, of course, to protect your traffic if you're in an open, if you're in a coffee shop or whatever. You don't really need to do that when you're on LTE, but when you're on Wi-Fi, yeah, that makes sense because a bad guy might be, you know, that kid in the hoodie in the corner might be snooping on you. The other reason people often use a VPN is to protect yourself from Verizon or your internet service provider, which is also watching your traffic. They're not trying to hack you, but they're selling information about you to advertisers and other third parties. So clearly a Verizon VPN solution would help you with the former, but not with the latter. $2.99 a month is not expensive. You know, good VPNs are going to cost at least that much. You know, it's the same question. Do you trust Verizon?
The only problem I've had with it is that when I click, you know, you're protected, it seems to keep, it doesn't stay on there. Like I have to keep doing it, like somehow disengage they don't pass data, so you're not protected. You want to connect.
And you're not sure. Yeah, you're not. Am I protected? Am I not? It's a downloadable app. I'm reading their FAQ. It does use a VPN. Obviously, the VPN would be hosted by Verizon. Yeah, I mean, almost certainly Verizon's logging your what you do on there. I don't think that's necessarily a problem. Verizon, remember, has a bad reputation because for some time they were putting tracking cookies on every customer's phone and then selling that information to advertisers. The FCC made them stop and fined them for that. But that's why I don't know if I fully trust what they're doing. If you want a VPN on your phone, my suggestion would be to get a third-party VPN and shop carefully on VPNs because you want to make sure, read the privacy policy, that they don't snoop on you. That's really important. I'm reading the FAQ. It seems like it's a good VPN. It's just that you're not protecting yourself from Verizon, just from the bad guys. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo. I'll read up a little bit more. I should know more about this safe Wi-Fi from Verizon. I'll read up a little bit more about it and let you know. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo. Well, I'm looking on the Verizon page about their Wi-Fi, and actually it's provided by McAfee. They're reselling McAfee. And they say the thing that you really want to hear when you're signing up for a VPN, which is that we do not track or log your connections. So that's really, really important. And the fact that Verizon says that to me is encouraging. Safe Wi-Fi, that's the brand name for Verizon's Wi-Fi solution or VPN solution, never tracks, logs, or stores any of your personal information. By using our VPN, your IP address is hidden and data is secure. If that's true, and I'm sure they're not lying, then I'd have no hesitation recommending it because it is a little more expensive. It's $3.99 a month for up to 10 devices, but that's a good price. That's a good price. And since it comes from Verizon, you got to figure that they're going to do it right. And the reason they say safe Wi-Fi is because you are encrypted on when you're using the LTE. It's only when you start using somebody else's Wi-Fi that it's a problem. I don't know why it would switch on or off, except it does have a trusted network feature where you can say, hey, look, I'm at home and I trust it, so you don't need to use the VPN then. Maybe that's part of it. You might try turning that off. It looks fine, and at that price, I think it's a good deal. You get up to 10 devices, I think, for the $4 a month. I take it back. I'm going to give Verizon the benefit of that. They say the most important words, which is we don't track your surfing. 8888, ask Leo, line 2, Bobby, Tulsa, Oklahoma. Hello, Bobby.
Hello.
Welcome. What can I do for you?
I got a question for you. Thanks,
yes,
for taking my call.
Thank you.
About 2 years ago, I uploaded a guitar demonstration video on my wife's YouTube channel.
Nice.
And that music store is out of business now.
Oh.
And I went back to her channel, and she doesn't remember her ID or password.
Oh, nuts.
So I tried to figure out a way to, you know, get in and find out the password. And it just tells you, you know, that they need your old phone number. I guess, is YouTube tied in with Google somehow?
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah, your YouTube password is your Google account. So if she's forgotten her Google login, there is a, you know, recovery process, but as you might imagine, it's difficult because they don't want somebody to come along and say, hi, I'm Bobby, what's my password?
Of course.
So they're going to make it tough. So you have to essentially...
they want to know an old cell phone number that she doesn't have anymore. And
she doesn't remember it.
Remember.
Yeah.
No.
That's what they're going to do, is they're going to ask you questions that in theory only you would know the answer to. Unfortunately, often that means no one knows the answer to.
Right.
So you could keep... There may be, you know, like, oh, I don't know that. There may be other things you can do. At some point, it gets crazy. Like, Do you remember when you signed up for Gmail and what was your first message and things like that? And so if you can't answer those questions, you know, it's going to get harder and harder, not easier and easier, because a bad guy can't answer those questions either. And they're saying, well, maybe it really isn't Bobby or Bobby's wife. Maybe this is somebody else. I don't know what the final stage of this is. Maybe you send them a picture of your driver's license or something. I'm not sure. But all you can do is pursue that Google recovery process to the bitter end.
So I guess the only way to contact them is through an email.
There's no one to. Yeah, good luck. As we were talking earlier in the show, we always joke that Google's tech support is basically a Python script. There's no humans on the other end. There are, actually. And if you have a paid-for Google service, the support is not that bad. You know, Google Fi, if you're paying for something. But remember, this is a free service. So support on a free service is always going to be a little bit tricky.
You know, they have a Google plant here in Pryor, Oklahoma. Maybe I could go knock.
No, you're referring to an earlier caller, some probably last year, the year before, who lived in Irvine. She literally went down to the Google offices in Irvine, and the doors were locked. She started pounding on the doors. Let me in. I need my account. I don't think it worked. Google's not. When you get a service for free, tech support is probably the single most expensive thing of any web service, and so they're not going to offer great tech support just because, you know, they haven't made enough money on you to justify it. But keep trying.
Are you saying if I purchase something from them, maybe?
Yeah, but it won't be support for that. There are, you know, there are other things you can do. It's possible she did set up the password and it's on the same machine, maybe as part of a browser, and she's forgotten. Look in her browsers, see if she's been remembering passwords in the browsers, and it might be there.
Okay.
This is an intentionally difficult process because they don't want somebody to hack your account.
I'll keep forging into it and see what I can find.
Yeah.
I appreciate your help.
And yell at your wife, next time use a password manager, because we all forget passwords. Nobody remembers their password.
Truly.
If you can remember it, it's a bad password, because it's like your kid's birthday or something. Don't, you know, use a password you can't remember, but then use software to help you remember it. Oh, I'm sorry.
Will do.
I'm sorry. Yeah, there's no magic key here. And honestly, they don't, even if you could call somebody at Google, they're not going to make it any easier. That's commonly a weak spot that hackers use, is customer service representatives. Because customer service representatives are there to serve the customer. And so often they're over-accommodating, and hackers can use it to get in. So Google, of course, which is very security-focused, is not going to make it easy. If you forget your password, that's why it's so important when you set up a Google account. And if you haven't done this and you have a Gmail account or a YouTube account or any Google account, go in there and add additional recovery information, a second email address, a phone number, preferably both, and then keep that up to date, because that's how you're going to recover it if you forget your password. And that's the problem, is you can't remember that phone number either. It was all a long time ago in the distant, hazy past. I remember nothing. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Oh, and Johnny Jett. What'd you say, John? Listen, I've traveled everywhere in this land. He's been everywhere. He's Johnny Jett, our traveling guy. Johnny is at johnnyjett.com. He's on the Twitter at johnnyjett, Instagram too. And every week he joins us to tell us how to travel better with technology. Johnny, where are you today?
I am in San Jose, California, speaking at the Santa Clara Travel Adventure Show. I just got off the stage, actually, so that's why my voice is kind of hoarse.
Hearse?
Yeah, hopefully I won't be in a hearse. A horse. And I speak again tomorrow at 1:45.
Nice. I see Natalie behind you. Hi, Natalie.
Oh, they say hi. He can see you.
Yeah, he's turning the camera quickly. God. She's like, jumping out of the way. Hilarious. Yeah. No, she looks great. Yeah. Hey, do you like my hat?
I love your hat. I mean, where can I get one of those?
You go fly Southwest. So we had Paige and Zach were in the studio a few weeks ago. She's a flight attendant. He is a co-pilot for Southwest. And she said her claim to fame, and you'll know if you've ever been on her plane, she makes pretzel crowns. And this is a made with toothpicks and pretzel packets from a Southwest flight. And I'm wearing with pride. Thank you, Paige. My pretzel crown.
I need to get one. Actually, we almost flew Southwest up here because they fly 737s and American flies regional jets. And I prefer a much wider plane.
But no 737 Maxes. Those are grounded.
That's true. Although I could have sworn I saw one landing last night, but I don't know if my eyes were deceiving me or what.
Boy, that's a terrible story, isn't it? And
totally.
Yeah, and so, it sounds like that there was a software upgrade that they offered at additional cost.
That's ridiculous. If that's true, that is the most ridiculous thing ever.
Never. I tell you what, you never compromise safety.
Never.
You just never compromise safety. I'm sorry.
So and it looks like they could be grounded. Air Canada just came out and said they're going to ground theirs until July.
Yikes.
I thought it was going to be much shorter than the 787, but it doesn't look like it.
Yeah, the 787 had batteries that were overheating, lithium-ion batteries, but that was, I guess, an easier fix than
that. That was 123 days, that one, I think.
Was it that long? Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was. Oh, wow. So, but this one looks like it might be longer, and that surprised me, but we'll see. But anyway, I'm speaking of this travel show, and there's all kinds of booths there. And one of them, I'm not even sure if they're there, but this is a great one for people who are looking to go on an international trip. The CDC, you want to check out their Traveler's Health page. So you can just Google CDC Traveler's Health page. Actually, I'll put it in the show notes right now, and I just tweeted it. So because it's a long URL, you're not going to be able to – but if you tweet it – I mean if you click the link I just put in there, actually
this
that goes
is great because – you know, when we were traveling to South America, we were trying to figure out what shots we needed. And exactly. We called the doctor and he said, I don't know. And so you have to find a travel, you know, special travel doctor or this information, which is great. And it's more than just the shots. It's also advice for traveling
everything.
With children.
And this is what the doctors use, actually. If you actually look on their webpage on the right, there's a spot for the doctors. So they can tell their patients what they need, what shots. But, you know, so you can put in your information, like if you're traveling with children, if you have a chronic disease, if you're going on a cruise. They have all different categories. Pregnant women, like my wife, you can just – so you click those, whatever fits your description, and they will let you know how to stay safe, you know, from outdoors, from bug bites, eating and drinking. So this is a great resource for anyone traveling internationally. I highly recommend spending the 5 minutes – reading it and looking at it.
You know, I never thought about this. A few years when I retire, we want to take a world cruise, which is a almost 6 month journey to many, many countries. I just realized we'll probably have to have a lot of shots before we go, won't we?
Yeah, you will. I mean, depending on where you're going, but on the world cruise, I'm sure you're going.
That's a lot of countries.
Yeah.
Wow.
So you'll need to get yellow fever, all those. I mean, you'll need to get.
It's a lot of planning. We've already started thinking, well, you know, what can we store stuff on the ship? Do we send stuff ahead? Because I don't have 6 months worth of underwear, that kind of thing.
Well, they'll have laundry on the ship.
Oh, yeah, laundry. So I've heard of that.
You either do it yourself.
Where am I going to put my pretzel crown?
Yeah, you're going to leave that one home. And actually, another good resource, since you are going on that trip or anyone else, I always like to look at the government's warning pages. So not only don't just look at the U.S. because sometimes it can be political.
I subscribe to the U.K. mailing list that you mentioned some years ago, and
yep,
I really
also,
like that.
I love it too. Yeah. Those send you updates whenever something goes wrong, if there is a natural disaster, or if there is a shooting, whatever. That will the U.K. will email you, but you can also check. You know, Canada's, Australia's, and the UK's warnings. So you just type in whatever country you're going to and put in those countries I just mentioned and their warnings, and that way you can find out what they recommend. And like right now, they just put the Bahamas on high alert because of theft violence.
I swear. You got to pay attention, but don't let that keep you at home. Don't get scared and just stay home.
Doubt.
Yeah,
and actually, a lot of people actually don't listen to the U.S. one because they think it's political. So that's why they cross-reference it with the others, because a lot of times the other ones aren't referencing or not warning their there are people. And also, you know, obviously, I don't want to scare anyone when they travel. Just be smart. You know, always stay away from if there's anyone, you know, picketing or anything right. like that. Don't, you know, just stay away from all that kind of stuff.
I told, you know, in the fall, we're going to Jerusalem and Egypt and Jordan and everybody, when I tell them that, says, oh no, it's so scary, it's dangerous. No, it's okay, you know, I'm gonna go anyway, it's not dangerous, but it's probably prudent to make sure you check.
You do, but you know, I was the same way. My first time to Israel, I was so scared.
No.
When I got there, I actually felt more safe there than I do in America.
That's right. So, I have my pretzel crown, nothing gonna mess with me.
Yeah, so definitely you know, take it all with a grain of salt. But
yes, you don't want to get so scared that you don't see the world, because the world is an amazing place.
By the way,
I'm not going on a world cruise until we figure out how I could do the radio show from the boat.
You're not going to go until you figure out how you can bring me along with you.
And Johnny can go. Johnny, Natalie, and their 14 kids can go with me. Yeah, that's right, because that's how long it's going to be. I figured that internet on ships is going to get better and better to the point where I can actually do a radio show from a boat in the middle of the ocean. When that day happens, I'm off. I'm gone. I'm going. I can't wait.
I'm with you. More money. So I'm with you.
So what else you have?
So, you know, I love maps, especially when I'm traveling.
Me
and it
too.
Makes it so much easier.
Me
but,
too.
You know, I sometimes find like Google Maps either confusing or it's slow or I don't want to go the route they're taking me.
Right.
So there's an app called Mapless, MAPLESS. And it's just so simple. All it does is have an arrow. It's like a compass. It shows you which direction you want to go. So you just walk that way.
That's nice.
So you can get lost in whatever town or city you're in. And
it's
it
for walking, though, right? Now, you wouldn't want that for driving.
No, you definitely don't. It's just for walking. There's no turn-by-turn instructions.
No. It's just this way. That's good, because it's always – I frankly find it hard to do walking directions on Google Maps and Apple Maps, because I can't figure out which way I'm pointed.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
Yeah.
So this right away will show you, and I do love it, how it tells you how many steps or how long it will take you at the current rate you're going.
It also says, and I think this is a good point, look around. Enjoy your walk.
Exactly.
Makes it easier. You don't have to stare at the map the whole time.
Yep. So I think I just downloaded it last week, and I used it once already, and I really enjoyed it.
This feature is being slowly added to Google's Maps, by the way. If you do walking directions, not everybody has it yet, but they're going to turn on an augmented reality feature. So you point your camera at where you are, and it'll show you on the Google Maps a big arrow saying go that way.
Good.
So that's going to be nice. I'm looking forward to that. Google announced that almost a year ago, but apparently it's starting to come out. Johnny Jett, johnnyjett.com. That's where you'll find his great travel advice. And if you follow him on Twitter, take a look at his great lists of all sorts of useful information, and on Instagram for his great pictures. And we will see you next week. Safe travels, Johnny.
Thank you. You too.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, wearing my fine pretzel hat. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo. Back on the line, Vicky in Rialto, California. Hi, Vicky.
Hello.
Thanks for hanging on. What can I do for you?
Well, I put my computer to sleep last night, and this morning I got up to turn it on, and the screen came on and had the Dell logo, and then it was blank.
It's the big sleep.
Yep, and then I turned the computer completely off, turned it back on. I've done that several times. The logo loads, and the little dots go around the bottom, and every once in a while a little blue line would go through like it was loading, and nothing. I don't know what to do.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of things that could have gone wrong. Do you hear any beeps?
No.
Okay, so it's getting past what they call the power-on self-test or post-test. That's an early test before Windows starts to load, to make sure that RAM's okay. You know, anything that the computer would be so severe the computer couldn't give you a text message on the screen. So it's getting past that. If anything were stopping it there, like a failed motherboard or bad memory or anything like that, you'd hear beeps. Since you don't, well, it's both good and bad. It's good because your computer's probably okay hardware-wise. But what's probably happened is your hard drive has either failed or, more likely, and this is actually surprisingly common, the area where Windows is, where, you know, the next step would be to load in Windows, is damaged. And that can happen just from wear. It can happen for a variety of reasons. Power surges. Usually, it's something you can fix or at least figure out. Do you have data on that computer that's not backed up?
No, I have a backup.
I wish you could see my giant smile, Vicki. Thank you.
Yeah, I listen to you whenever I can. I have a 2 terabyte backup drive. I did have I switched it so it's on top of the computer and it's on automatic backup.
So happy. Because honestly, this is no big deal if you have a backup.
For you.
Even for you. So it's a few years old, I would imagine. How old is it?
I think it's about 4 years or 5 years.
So you're at the age where you start to have sudden hard drive death. They just stop working sometimes. So you have a couple of choices. You can try to get that hard drive working again. And to do that, you would need to download an operating system on a friend's computer. It's a good idea to have this if you're listening.
Well, I have a download disk.
Nice. And if it will boot from that, then you can at least boot it up and see if you can even see your drive.
Okay.
So if you boot to an external CD or DVD or USB key, something externally that will start up the machine, not from the internal drive, but from an external source, and it starts up and everything's working, that A means your computer's fine. That's good news. And then you can say, well, what about that drive in the computer? Can I see it? If you can see it, that's a really good sign. Sometimes you'll say, the computer will say, there's no drive there. And then that means the circuitry on the hard drive has died or the cable fell out. Maybe a cat jumped up on it and jiggled it just enough that the cable fell out. That could easily be it. It's a desktop?
No, it's a desktop.
So you can all...
We checked the connections.
You did check that.
Everything lights up and, you know, like we can hear... I put a DVD in and it didn't come on and then... Well, it was a music one, and of course my sound is off because I don't have my sound on.
Yeah.
Unless I'm listening.
Windows isn't starting, so nothing's gonna happen. The only question is why Windows isn't starting.
But and so I take the backup, the Windows CD, and I put it in. And
if it's bootable, you'd have to tell your setup program. You know, that's the program that launches, and I don't remember on a Dell if it's F2 or F7 or F11 or Escape or Delete, but there's some key you push. Right about when you see that Dell logo. Actually, if you press the escape button when you see the Dell logo, usually it'll give you an instruction. But there's some key you get into setup. I would try to boot from that disk, and it may just say, oh, yeah, I see a disk in the drive, so I'm going to start with that. If it doesn't, you'll have to tell it, change the boot order so that it will try the disk before it tries the hard drive. Because once it tries the hard drive and fails, it just goes and stops. I'm not sure, but you need to get into the setup. You may not first start by putting in the disk and turning the machine all the way off and then turning it on again. And if the disk starts to load up, good. Now, those disks, it depends what you have. Sometimes those disks are just installers. They don't have an operating system on them. It really depends. You may need to get something that you can boot up to, and it could be, Microsoft offers a Windows Media Creation tool that you can get, go to another computer, download it, make a USB, bootable USB key. But you need something you can boot from, because that's the first step, just to see what's happening with that internal drive. If this is all too much, you can also take the computer into somebody and have them do it, but that's what they'll do. And once they see if that drive is physically, you can even do this if you go in setup. When the computer first starts, it's hidden by that Dell logo. Hit escape. You'll see it recognize different drives. If it recognizes the drive, that's a good sign. It means it can actually connect electrically to the drive. And then it's trying to load in what's on the drive, and what's on the drive is corrupted or missing or something. And that's actually the best possible scenario, because sometimes you can just erase and start over, reinstall Windows, copy your data back on, and you're good to go. Well, I would say after 4 or 5 years, this would be a good excuse to buy a new hard drive. In fact, you could put a solid state drive in there that would start up faster and run cooler and more reliably.
Okay. Now, those are usually not very, very much memory on them, is there?
Well, that's changing, but you're right. They were more expensive for the same amount. So, but you can now get a terabyte. How big is your current drive? Do you know?
I've got 1 terabyte and 8 RAM.
So you could get a terabyte SSD for about $130, $140. So, I mean, but of course you can get a 2 terabyte spinning drive for $50. So it's up to you.
Yeah.
I like SSDs. I think that's a nice upgrade. So you'll, in a way, you'll get a nice upgrade. Plus you reinstall Windows. Was it Windows 10?
Yes.
Good news. You don't have to have a serial number or anything. You could just download Windows 10 from Microsoft and reinstall it. Do you have another computer you can get access of friends or a laptop or something?
No, I have a tablet. My daughter has a Dell laptop. She's gone through 3 batteries, and we still can't get it working.
Ay, gavalt. Ay, ay, ay.
I mean, she's had nothing but bad luck with Dell. It went out before her one-year warranty was out. They sent her a hard drive, and 2 months later, it went out. And they said, sorry, but, you know, you're out of warranty. But
she
was only 2 months old. And then she got another one, and now she's having problems with, you know. I mean, she's trying to get Dell original equipment, and, you know.
I normally would recommend Dell. I don't have any problem with Dell. I think it's unfortunate. It sounds like you got a bad experience.
Anything electrical that we have a problem with it.
Oh. Maybe your house has some strange power situation.
Well, that could be. I don't know. I mean,
is it an older home?
Yeah, it was built in 1979.
Oh, it's not that old.
Yeah.
But there, you know, that's another thing to look at. If a lot of electrical devices are dying on you, usually that means there's something wrong with the power.
Well, even our cell phones and everything just, you know, are weird.
Or you're just jinxed. You just have there's something going on, and you just electronics and you do not mesh. I see that all the time.
Something similar to this happened last year, and the guy took it, and he wasn't like at a store or anything, and he advertises on our neighborhood app and that, and he took it, and I don't think he knew what to do, and so he reinstalled Windows, and then he had it for about 2 weeks.
Don't bring it to that guy.
I know that.
That's hit or miss. Occasionally you'll get a guy on neighborhood, and he's really good. He's like a wizard. Because honestly, the guys you're going to get at Best Buy or other stores like that, same problem. You know, some of them got three weeks. Sometimes they got 3 weeks of training. Sometimes they're really good. It's hit and miss.
Our Office Max says that they will diagnose your computer for free.
Okay, bring it to them. They will, but say before you do anything, please contact me. What I'm going to recommend, no matter what's wrong with it, is that you got an SSD drive in there. You can have them install it. And then install Windows 10. You won't have to use a serial number. And now you're very fortunate. You have your backup. You just restore all your data. Everything will be faster, better. Hard drives die. It's just the fact of the matter. Nothing you can do about that.
Yeah, and I have tons of pictures, so that's why I made sure I back up all
good.
The pictures on.
Good. Vicky.
I have a flash drive.
Awesome. You know. So proud of you. Well done. At least you haven't lost data. That's the worst case in this. Computers, you know.
You're telling me that.
Yeah, 4 or 5 years. Yeah, a hard drive's going to die. That's not going to be a surprise. And the good news is they're bigger and better and cheaper than they were 5 years ago. So you're just going to replace the hard drive. It's like tires. You know, they wear out. You got to replace them occasionally. But with a good backup, you're going to be back up and running fast. Yeah, take it to the Office Max. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Well, hey, hey, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We got your smartphones. We got your smartwatches. We got your augmented reality, your virtual reality, your real reality. 8888 Ask Leo. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, you want to talk high tech, 888 827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. We have a website, techguylabs.com. All the answers go up there if you have a question. And if you have an answer that I haven't given and you'd like to help out, please, by all means, go there and leave a comment. Techguylabs.com. It is free. There's no sign-up. We just want your input. We want to make a resource everybody can use on the internet. Let's go to Orange County. David is on the line. Hi, David.
How are you doing, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
Not too bad. Got an email question for small business. We've got 5 users, including myself, so real small business, local server, using Outlook desktop client for Microsoft's hosted Exchange. Our problem is we have to really start sending some secured emails, PDF attachments, things like that. And Microsoft has been struggling for weeks with me daily tech support calls to get it to work through their client. So I'm ready for another option if you have one.
Yeah, I mean, in general, I'm not a fan of attachments at all. And if you're willing to send links to these files, you can do it completely independently of your Exchange server in any email client and in a much more secure fashion. So there are a number of commercial services that offer this kind of thing that, you know, for instance, what you're looking for is something that, even if you're not in the medical profession, is HIPAA compliant or FINRA compliant, compliant with the privacy and security regulations in the medical and financial services industry, respectively. If you're a lawyer, if you have confidential information, if you're doing tax returns, all of that will be adequate as long as it's compliant with those standards to what you need. The one I recommend, it's not free, but it's a great system designed specifically for this use, is ShareFile from Citrix. It's at ShareFile.com. And the whole idea is you'd upload that file you want to share with a client to ShareFile. You have all sorts of ways you can set it. You can say this file will expire in a day or in a week or in a month. You can say it requires a password. There's all sorts of additional security you can add to it. And then you send them, instead of sending them the file, you send them a link, which is frankly a better way to do it. It makes your email smaller and it's more secure, and then you don't have to wait for Microsoft to do it. If you don't want to spend any money, there are independent services that I think are trustworthy. My favorite is brand new, and it's from the folks who do Firefox, the browser. This is an open source solution, so it's secure. Mm-hmm. It's called SendFile. It's sendfile.firefox.com. You can send files of up to 2.5 gigabytes. Is that sufficient for you?
Yeah, absolutely.
And the nice thing about this is you're, unlike ShareFile, where recipients, I think, no, I guess not. I was going to say have to log in, but I don't think they do with ShareFile. But they certainly don't with Firefox Send. They'll get a link, and they'll click the link, and they'll download it. It's encrypted from your end to Firefox, from Firefox to them. But if you want to add additional security, you can also put a password on it. And then that way, what you'll do is you'll share under a separate channel. You don't want to put it in the email, but under a separate channel. Maybe when you meet the client in person, you say, I'm going to send you your tax returns or whatever, and here's the password you'll need to unlock it. Or you can tell them ahead of time, use your last name and the last four digits of your social or something like that. And that way, you'll have a really secure file sharing that's free. So because it's Mozilla and open source, I trust it. And this one's free. ShareFile is paid, not super expensive. And I think a lot of attorneys and doctors and so forth who need compliance use those solutions. Much easier than trying to get the email client to do it.
That's great. Then I'll go that route.
Yep. I'm not a fan of sending attachments because that's, of course, how people get hacked. Email attachments is the number one vector for infections. And often these attachments come from somebody you know. In fact, if you look at the history of data breaches, you know, all the companies that have gotten hacked into, starting with Sony Pictures Entertainment and Target and Equifax and on and on and on. In almost every case, the way the attack begins, the Democratic National Committee, is what's called a spear phishing, an email targeted at a person, in this case, John Podesta, head of the DNC, that looked legit. That came from a colleague or a boss or a client. And it said, here's the spreadsheet or here's the PDF we've been talking about. What could go wrong? That somebody you know sending you something you're expecting? Great. You open it and it isn't a spreadsheet or a PDF. It is malware with a payload. And so that's why attachments are risky. Now, of course, you can send an attachment through Firefox Send, in effect. But I just don't – I don't like my employees, and I don't want you as listeners to get in the habit of sending and opening attachments. That's how bad guys do it, and it's a big, big risk. So be careful there. Now, can a bad guy use Firefox Send? I guess so, right? So there, it also requires some attentiveness on the part of your employees so that they don't get bit by this. It's a big problem. It's the number one problem with breaches. And, you know, you've heard phishing attacks – spelled with a PH. Those are generalized emails, and we've all got them. You get them all the time. Hi,
You know, I'm an attractive young lady who would like to meet men of a certain age. Perhaps you'd like to see my pictures. Or, you know, and I can go on and on. They're always, or this is your bank, and we need you to log in immediately because there have been suspicious transactions on your account, and we want you to approve them. Oh, my gosh, suspicious transactions. And you'll type, you click the link in the email, and you type in your credentials, and you try to log in your bank, except it's not your bank. Looked like your bank, but it's bad guys who now have your login for your bank. So this is notorious. It's a big problem. Spear phishing attacks are targeted. They're even worse because they are aimed at specific employees in a known company. So hackers can use the boss's name. They can use details that make it look even more real. So absolutely be very careful about attachments. I don't recommend sending them. I don't recommend opening them. And I think these additional steps are, hackers are less likely to use them because they don't need to. The attachment works just fine. They're not worried about using Firefox Send or ShareFile. It's too much trouble for them. They don't want to set up an account. Plus, it makes it a little more maybe traceable. So we don't want that either, do we? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Take a little time out. Come back with more of your calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Line 4, Jim in Southern Maryland. Hello, Jim.
Hello, Mr. Laporte.
How are you, Mr. Jim?
Doing fine. I've got a question about external hard drives.
Okie dokie.
I've got a SanDisk. It's only 500 gigabytes. But I found a copy of a file, and I got to wondering, how many other duplicates do I have?
Uh-oh, I got to wondering. So you have some duplicate files. How are you copying stuff to that hard drive? How are you backing up to it?
Off my MacBook Air.
Do you just drag it there?
Yep, I just drag it there, and I put different folders.
So yep. I'm gonna recommend for future a program that will prevent the duplications. It's a free program, although I pay for a premium version because it's worth it to me. It's not expensive. It's called Super Duper. Everybody with a Mac ought to own Super Duper.
Super Duper.
Super. It's from Shirt Pocket Software. Shirt Pocket, I think, well, anyway, I think ShirtPocket.com. But if you Google Super Duper Macintosh, you'll find it. And that, what that does, and I run it on a schedule, and it will, you'll plug in an external drive, and there's some various options. The way I set it up is I want that external drive to mirror my internal drive. The reason being, if the internal drive dies, it's very easy on the Macintosh, reboot the machine, hold down the option key, and boot to the external drive. And as long as that external drive is an exact duplicate, a bootable duplicate of the internal drive, I'm back up and running with no data loss, no time down. And I find that very, very handy. Now, you don't have to do it that way. You can just say, hey, Super Duper, just synchronize these folders. An important setting to know about is the whether you want to synchronize two ways, both directions. Generally, with backup, you don't. You don't want to synchronize deletions. So if you delete a file, you don't want it deleted on the backup because you want to keep it just in case. And so all of these are settings in Super Duper, but that'll eliminate the duplicate problem because Super Duper will not copy a file if it's already there on your hard drive. It says, no, you got that. There are a number of duplicate file finders for the Macintosh. I would try something called Gemini, the intelligent duplicate file finder. The trick with a duplicate file finder is you want to make sure that it's not just looking at superficial attributes like the name of the file and the date, something like that. You really want to make sure they're duplicate files. You want it to be looking inside the file and saying, oh, yeah, bit for bit, this is exactly the same. Then you can delete it. So that's what Gemini 2 does. It's from a company called MacPaw, MacPaw.
Okay.
And it's free to try. It's not expensive. It's $20 if you want to buy it. This is a really not, there are free duplicate file finders if you don't want to spend any money, but this one I think is smart enough to either not delete files that are exact duplicates, or you can actually say, hey, if it's really close, like it's a photo and there's three different copies of different
You can even have it get rid of similar photos of the same thing. So,
oh, okay.
Yes,
I keep MP3s, movies, and photos on my external hard drive. And
The last thing you want to do is duplicate big files like movies, because that's going to take up a lot of space. So clean it up with Gemini, and then from now on, you could say to Super Duper, back up the folders that contain photos, music, and movies, or back up the whole hard drive. If you get a drive, an external drive that's the same size or bigger than your internal hard drive, I find that really useful. I always have at least one of those, for backup. Hey, thanks for the call.
Hey, one thing about Hawaii.
Yes.
I really envy you there. I've been there 5 times.
Nice.
Yeah, I saw the airport twice and the pier and the Navy base 3 times.
Oh, you were in the Navy. Yeah, my father-in-law was stationed at Pearl. And yeah, you don't get the same experience, do you?
No. When all you're doing is looking off the flight deck of an aircraft carrier,
yeah,
you don't get much experience.
Well, but you had other kinds of experiences, I'm sure, and I appreciate your service. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Go back and enjoy it now.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, one of my goals is to go to Oahu and see the Pearl Harbor Memorial. That's apparently an amazing thing to see. So thank you for your service. I appreciate it. We all do. Actually, this is a little program note. I am going to Hawaii in a couple of weeks. We're going to be gone for 2 weekends. Now, what we've done is, and we try to do this whenever possible, is we've recorded calls. Maybe you remember that. In fact, I'm going to do a few more after the show today. We don't put them on the air, so nobody's heard them. And then we cut them up and put them together and make a whole new show. So there will be a whole new show April 6th and 7th. And then on the 13th and 14th, I'm pleased to say, my good friend Rich DeMuro from KTLA in Los Angeles, he's my regular filling guy. He'll be coming up and doing the show on that weekend. I know you like him. Just don't like him better than me, okay? Please. So that's in a few weeks. I will be taking some more calls in about half an hour because we're almost done. We've almost got all the calls we need to do the show. At 8888 Ask Leo, but that's good news. If you're on the line, hang on the line. We'll get to every single call. And if you have trouble getting in sometimes, this would be a good time to call. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Take a little break. Bottom of the hour. More calls. And then our gizmo wizard, the Gizwiz, coming up. You stay right here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. We're doing it right now. Mike is on the line from Maine. Micah works on it with a podcast about air travel. Hi, Micah.
Good morning. Good afternoon, rather. How you doing, Leo?
You do the pilot guy, right? What is it?
Well, a couple of them, but I'm most involved with the Airplane Geeks podcast.
Airplane Geeks. And there you go.
Also good friends with the Airline Pilot Guy podcast.
Yeah.
I work with them quite a bit, too.
So tell me about this 737 MAX.
Well, that's what I called about, because you said something, and the 737 MAX, I believe, and this is opinion, was primarily grounded because of social media more than anything
else.
You're
kidding.
No. That's truly my belief. The NTSB hasn't investigated it fully, and if you look at, there were two accidents with two aircraft, and they were horrible accidents, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, every soul aboard lost.
Right. But the Lion Air crash, the day before the first crash with Lion Air, that same aircraft was flying, and there happened to be a jump seater in the cockpit at the time, and they were going through the same issues, and the jump seater said, wait, you just got to do this, and everything was fine. And
that's what Boeing has said all along, is if you go through our standard emergency checklist, all will be fine. It will work with that new, what is it, the MCARS software?
MCAS, which stands for the Maneuvering Characteristic Augmentation System.
Yeah, and this was something that they had to add as a software adaptation, because these MAXs have larger engines and they're closer to the front of the plane.
Yes, they're more forward so that the center of gravity is different, and they create lift in and of themselves.
But and so the risk on these planes is that they can go into a stall, and so. This MCAS software pulls the nose down in order to avoid this stall. However, it's apparent that it can also do it by accident, and in one of the air crashes, the sensor was broken, and they were getting faulty sensor information. And as you might imagine, if you've got software that's pulling your nose down and the pilot's fighting it, the software wins, the plane will crash. And so that's what they think happened. Am I right, Micah?
Yeah, and what you just described is the whole aircraft accidents, and most accidents happen. They call it the Swiss cheese effect. All the holes line up.
Yeah, it's a cascade of bad things. Yeah. However, doesn't Boeing have to take some of the blame because they opted not to tell pilots about this MCAS software?
Not true. And in fact, this is one of the things I wanted to point out. Our guest on the Airplane Geeks this week is going to be a pilot that flies a 737, including the 737 MAX, and he will be able to describe all this. He knew about it all along. They all knew about it all along. It's a question of the study that goes and gets involved with it. And so there's a matter
Didn't Boeing, though, tell airlines you don't have to retrain pilots, you don't have to add anything to the manual? If they continue to follow the same emergency procedure, all will be well. In fact, one country decided not to do that, and that's Brazil, where they did add additional training. But as you might imagine, many airlines don't want to incur that cost. And so, of course, it's pilot error. Those two crashes were pilot error in the sense that had they turned off the MCAS, all would have been well.
You have to think of the MCAS. It's an auto trim system, keeping the airplane in trim. And whenever something automatic goes wrong, what do? You hand fly the aircraft and you turn off the automatics and you go back to hand flying.
Why do you think that the two pilots in the crashes did not do that?
I don't know. That's what we need to find out through the NTSB and the cockpit voice.
And we do have the recordings, and I haven't listened to them.
And we will know. And we will know exactly what's going on, but it takes years for this to happen. Yeah. In the meantime, because of the panic and the social media, these aircraft were grounded probably for no real reason, when all they had to do was probably put out a notification that if this happens, do this, and everything would have been fine.
Yeah, but Micah, if just one plane, one Southwest jet goes down, killing all aboard... Maybe because of pilot error. Probably because of pilot error.
But the same.
That's worse.
Could happen with any aircraft, Leo.
Well, we've had a very good safety record of late, right?
I mean, we have, exactly. And one of the reasons.
But you now have two horrible crashes. Is that not enough reason to say, "Whoa, let's step back and figure out what's going on"?
We had all that. If you want to make an analogy like that, you could look at what happened with the theft of all the data from our credit service providers. And shouldn't we close those down?
Yes.
I tend to agree we should.
Yes. As a matter of fact, yes. It'd be hard to get a credit card without them, but okay. But
one of the reasons this whole thing happened with the lack of training has to do with Southwest, who said, we don't want to have to train pilots, so make an airplane.
No, agreed. The airlines don't want to do the extra expense, so they're certainly to blame as well. There's plenty of blame to go around, Micah. I agree, but I don't...
There's a lot of it.
I don't know if it's fair to say, oh, this is a social media problem. Certainly, God knows, outrage on Twitter is way overused and as an excuse for everything. Twitter is made for that, and that's why I got off Twitter. I find it loathsome. And certainly, social media should never dictate policy of any kind. But I think a little prudence is also in order. And you can imagine any politician, when faced with the possibility that other lives would be lost, that would be devastating to a career. And in my opinion, that's why President Trump eventually told the FAA, yeah, we're going to ground this.
But the fact is that there are other aircraft have been in the same situation, that sometimes we're grounded, sometimes we're not grounded.
Right.
There's going to be a glitch in any new aircraft, and the horrible glitches. Look at the DC-10 when that first came out.
Pilots are a funny breed, though, because pilots say the same thing. Well, duh, if you're having trouble with any automated system, you turn them all off and you fly. And I think pilots have a certain amount of cockiness associated with this. I'm going to be able to do this. And then when it really happens, and most pilots, I guess, are savvy enough to do that, but Apparently, at least two weren't. And so it might be prudent to figure out why this is going on and maybe fix it. Would you go up in a 787 MAX if they were still flying it?
Absolutely.
Not me.
No problem at all.
No way.
And I would highly recommend, if you have the time and if the listeners have the time, and I'm not trying to give, I don't, if you don't want me to plug it, I won't, but.
Plug it all. No. I think it's great.
The Airplane Geeks podcast will be out. It comes out Wednesday mornings at around 10.
I want to listen because you're getting somebody who knows something from firsthand about this. Yeah.
Who's been flying these for a long time. Yeah. He won't mention the airline because
it's likely that these pilots on the Lion Air and the Ethiopian Air were probably not well trained. I mean, I would guess, but I don't know. And maybe there's a fix that you could do in the software that would make it safer. I have to say, I think most Americans would be reluctant after those two crashes to fly. Two crashes, same profile, same plane. You start to say, maybe there's something going on. Let's find out. And I would be reluctant to fly a 787 MAX. So they may have had to do this anyway.
Please, let's make sure we get the right number. 737.
Sorry, 737, not 87. Thank you, yes. I'm flying a 7. Anyway. I'll fly any other 7, but not that one. Yeah.
And you'll be perfectly safe. And you'll have a great time, and you can have a wonderful trip, and I wish you well. And
thank you.
And aloha.
We're flying on an Airbus. Thank you, Micah. Always a pleasure. I really appreciate your calling in to talk about that, because it's a tech subject. I mean, this is software being trusted to fly a plane and a pilot not. Software being trusted to fix an issue because of these jets being repositioned and larger. And the software maybe didn't do the right thing. And the pilots weren't savvy enough to turn off the software. Does that sound like a situation we might all be in someday? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He's in a disco wonderland. Mr. Dick DiBartolo. Actually, he's in Boogie Disneyland is where he is.
Yes.
He is Mad Magazine's maddest writer for many a moon. He's also a gizmo wizard. We just shorten it down to Gizwiz. And he's here to share a gizmo with us. Hello, Dickie D.
Leo, how are you, pal?
I am feeling fine. Not going to fly any 737 MAXs in the near future.
Oh, my gosh. You know, I am frightened in hindsight.
In hindsight? What could have happened?
Because I flew out each way on a 737 MAX to a CES on American.
Yikes. So from now on, when you get on the plane, you just say to the pilot, you know to turn off the MCAS, right? And then punch in the nose, and then you say,
yeah,
you
exactly. Yeah. No, I carry the instructions with me.
Yes.
And so if anything, I say, you want an extra copy of those? Because I'm in.
You know where the MCAS switch is, right? I just checked.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
All right. There's absolutely a YouTube bizarre video that explains it in case you don't know. I'll send you the link. How to be an annoying passenger.
Oh, my God.
So what do you got for us?
Okay, well, you know, I am always on the lookout for unique gadgets. And so when I got an ad for the antique fireplace lantern.
Oh, yeah. Who wouldn't want one of those?
Did you ever hear of such a thing?
No, I don't even know what you're talking about.
Okay, it turns out it's a thing. You know about fake fireplaces?
Oh, look at that.
Look.
Okay, Bo, that's got to be hot. Put that down.
This is a lantern that you can hang in the backyard. My spouse, Dennis, absolutely loves it. Was using it 24
hours.
Well,
that's because he's a big phony anyway, right?
No. He likes his fake fireplace.
I have a fake fireplace, and I like mine, too. I understand.
Yeah, I know. But his bed doesn't face the fireplace. So he said, the lantern would be great. I can hang it at the end of my bed.
And have a little flame burning.
Yeah.
It's got logs and everything.
It has little logs and everything. But that brought up another gadget. So he said, listen, I'm loving this thing. Yeah. It's LED. I thought it would, batteries would last forever. But then I realized there's a little motor in there, because if you hold your ear to it, there's a motor in there spinning the wheel that generates the flame effect. So he kept going through batteries. And I said, wait a minute.
Hold on there.
And I did some research, and I found the Everglow AA battery converter.
What
okay?
the heck is that?
Leo, this is really neat. It comes with three dummy AA batteries that you need to put into the device to fool it.
Uh-huh.
And then it comes with an AC adapter that powers one of the batteries with 4.5 volts. So the lantern is perfect because the lantern takes three batteries. So you put two dummy batteries in it. You put the 1 4.5 volt battery in it. And then I thought, you know, the battery door, how is that going to work? They actually, the plug is connected to the battery with a very thin ribbon wire.
Oh, perfect.
That actually fits out through the battery door.
Nice.
So now it runs night and day on AC power.
If you don't mind a little wire. Now, you have to get the one that's right for your batteries, whether it's AA or AAA, but they have
that
both.
Is, yes, that, yeah. They make both. They make
nice.
Both. And I'm not quite sure why they give you four batteries, because if the one battery puts out 4.5 volts, that only equals three AAs. So if you put it in a device with four AAs, I'm not sure. If it's a light, it's probably going to be a touch dimmer. I don't know about that.
Okay.
Because the thing I used only needed three batteries.
Sounds like a lot of math. I don't understand it. But you know what? You can read all about it at Dick's website, gizwiz.biz. We bought, have you seen the ads for the light bulbs that are flickery?
Oh, yeah.
It makes your, so I put them in my den, and it looks like you're in a medieval dungeon. Because I have sconces on the wall. I put those light bulbs in, and it's flickery like you're in a dungeon. It's awesome.
Yeah. Well, my whole building was that way, and then we got Con Ed
and fixed it.
You know, the flickery refrigerator, that was a problem.
Yeah, some things you don't want to flicker.
Yeah, exactly.
So mine burnt out, though, that bulb, first bulb. I had two, and one burnt out already. So I don't know if they don't last as long as traditional.
Well, you know,
LEDs.
They're not LEDs, right?
Oh, they're not. They're incandescent lights?
I believe they're incandescent, and that's...
Oh.
Yeah. Did they look flamey, or were they white?
They looked flamey.
Yeah.
Whatever that is.
Flamey. That's flamey.
On a good day, I look flamey.
Flamey.
I don't.
That's flamey.
Okay. Like a flame. Yeah, they look like flames. It was perfect because nobody could see the chopping block in the corner. It was fantastic. It was very dim, but it was very flickery. I liked it. It really, I felt like Vincent Price's lab or something. It was really cool.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I need some of those, too, in that case.
They've had those for years.
I have a cauldron, apparently. But I don't have a flicker.
Yeah, you need a cauldron, too, to really complete it.
That I have.
Yeah. If you want to know more about the iZoom Antique LED Fireplace Lantern and it's an accompanying Everlasting Glow battery converter, you know where to go. GIZWIZ.BIZ. That's Dick's website. Gizwiz.biz. He's also, while you're there, got a link to other shows he appears on, like ABC's World News Now. And he has the What the Heck Is It contest. Chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. If you can identify the guitar suction cup holder. No, oh, I said it. I'm so sorry.
Oh, now I have to start a new contest.
Ruined it. No, it's not. It's a Barbie mattress. No.
Those are all good. Those are all good.
So
Send them in.
Maybe I could win.
Employees are eligible.
So he's giving away up to 18 autographed copies of Mad, 6 for the right answer, 12 for the wrong answer, and he'll have a drawing if there's multiple choices. Decisions of the judges are final. I don't know if that's true. I just say it because it sounds good.
Sure.
Yeah, batteries not included. Member FDIC. Dick DiBartolo, thank you, sir. It's always
You're
a
welcome,
pleasure.
Pal. And, I'll see you next week.
We'll see you next time. Take care. Bye-bye. Last call for now, although I will keep taking calls after the show ends because we want to record ahead. Jerome is on the line from Missoula, Montana. Hello, Jerome.
How you doing, sir?
I am well. What can I do for you?
Good to hear. So I have a question for you. I'm trying to get a THX Kraken, like the surround sound thing, to work.
Yeah.
For one of my family members. Computers, when I get it to work, it works through the headset, but no sound at all will no longer go through the peripherals for the actual speakers and subwoofer and stuff for it.
Right? Oh, that's annoying.
Get it to, yeah.
Is that only when the headset's connected, or is it all the time?
So what seemed to have happened is after I plugged it in and installed the Synapse, and then it disabled all the audio cards.
Yeah.
Audio cards, and then it re-enabled them.
Oh, it
now
took...
it will allow you to default one and then communication for the second one.
Yeah.
If I switch it around, it doesn't, the headset stops working because it uses two.
Boy, you got me. I have no idea. I don't have any experience with this Synapse software at all. And I have no idea why it's going wrong. I don't even have a direction to point you in on this one. So I'm going to flip over all the cards. We'll send you $5. And thanks for playing our game. Thanks to Big Pee Wee. He's our musical director, doing a great job. Thanks also to Kim Schaffer, our phone angel, answering the phones. But thanks most of all for your participation. I appreciate your listening. If you're on the line, hang on the line. We're going to continue to take calls after we go off the air for a vacation. And don't forget the website where all the answers lurk, techguylabs.com. It's free, no sign up, but you can always find what you need there. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T, it stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.